Welcome to the podcast version of Sunday Miscellany, which differs from the radio version for rights reasons. We hope you enjoy the programme.
This summer, I asked my French in-laws about a strange place name in Upper Languedoc, Ousclatz. They said it had something to do with water. I immediately thought it might be Gaulish, connected to the Irish Ishka, but it's probably from Occitan. But it set me wondering why so little of the Gauls and their language remained. Occitania, where I live, was once part of Gallia Narbonensis, the first Roman province north of the Alps. The Gauls, a large group of Celtic peoples covering much of Western Europe during the Iron Age, were part of the language family that includes Irish. Long before Caesar, Romans and Greeks traded wine for Gallic metal, salt, fabrics and slaves, dubbing their territories Hairy Gaul and Trousered Gaul. French schoolbooks once referred to them as our Gallic ancestors, a phrase long abandoned. Many of us retain images from Asterix and Obelix, cartoons by Uderzo and Goscinny, who based them on 1960s archaeology of Gauls with long moustaches, druids and magic potions. Current research finds them much more complex and sophisticated. I learned they had razors for shaving cheeks and beards, leaving only the moustache. Romans were everywhere in my Irish schoolbooks, in Latin, religious and Roman history, Shakespeare plays. In Caesar's Gallic Wars, I taped blank flaps over the English translations, inscribing each with the pious Latin abbreviation AMDG. Nobody mentioned that they referred to a large swathe of Western Europe or that the Gauls were linguistic cousins of the Irish. Caesar wrote his history to impress Rome. He needed Gaul to be huge, not just a mosaic of loosely federated tribes with no interest in becoming an empire. He probably inflated the numbers of vanquished Gauls, compiled from tribal lists he says he found, which would be a strange move for a people without an alphabet of their own. The victors write history. Romanization disguised the richness of Gallic remains, only now being recovered. Romans and Gauls worshipped at the same shrines. Caesar named the Roman gods, and the Gaulish ones disappeared. It is said the Romans didn't become Gallic, Gauls became Roman. One might talk of synthesis. Some Gaulish words survived, from trade to agriculture to iron making, carpentry, and the names of umpteen towns like Paris, Lyon, Carcassonne. The French for plough sock, soc de charrue, comes from the Gaulish sucos, a pig's snout, for which the Old Irish is also sock. Before the Romans, Gallic farmers generally left the coastal arc of shifting sandbars and lagoons to traders from Phoenicia, Etruria and Greece. One place they all might have met was Latara, an old port near Montpellier. Pliny the Elder describes Latara fishermen, they may have been Gauls, he doesn't say, calling dolphins to help them trap mullet heading out to sea. The dolphins arrive, block the mullet, eat some, then hang around to get their real reward, bread dipped in wine. Latara's archaeological museum has a copy of a neat Gaulish home. A display of pointy-bottomed amphorae has one that is flat-bottomed, the Gallic one. Practical people, they also invented the barrel, the French for which is tonneau, which seems related to Old Irish ton, meaning skin, an earlier method of carrying liquids. In the same museum, a glass case contains samples of Gallo-Greek letters scratched on pieces of ceramic by someone learning to write. In Nîmes, one hot, windy August day, I was still on the look for Gauls. The origin of Nîmes is Nemausus, the sacred spring and god of a Gaulish tribe that accepted Romans without resistance. There's a connection between the root of the name and the Irish word niav. Here too were the Romans. Barriers in front of the Roman amphitheatre awaited crowds for a gladiator fight. I discovered that vomitorium is not what we thought it was. It's rather a crowd exit. Imperial crimson banners against grey stone reminded me how Hollywood epics also fed us the Romans. In French public discourse, however, mention of Gauls can be complicated. They can still represent something uncouth, barbarian. President Macron caused minor ructions some years ago when he criticised the French as Gaulois refractaires. Refractaire is a catch-all word conveying resistant, intractable, recalcitrant, ungovernable, indomitable. An earlier description by President Mitterrand was all-inclusive. We're French, our ancestors Gauls, slightly Roman, slightly Germanic, slightly Jewish, slightly Italian, slightly Spanish, ever more Portuguese, maybe Polish, and I'm wondering if we aren't already slightly Arab. Still on the trail of Gauls one evening in Ambrosum, we studied the deep ruts worn by carts in the stones of the Domitian Way, the Roman road stretching from Italy to Spain. The Romans got a reputation for building roads, but it appears that they followed old Gallic routes, adding paving and way stations. In Ambrosum, the Roman bridge was originally a mighty 11 arches wide. One arch remains abandoned in the river. It will serve as background for a sound and light show later. First, there's a jazz concert and a giant picnic. We drink Roman-style wine from earthenware bottles containing spices and herbs the Romans once added to disguise a rough taste. Romans watered their wine too, considering Gauls primitive because they didn't. Like them, we drink ours without ishka. Neither Gaul nor Gael can live on ishka alone. It isn't half bad.
Over the last decade, while I was researching the bungalow bliss house building phenomenon, I found myself looking back into shifts in education in Ireland during the 60s and 70s. Then I began thinking about my school days in Ballymahon in the 90s and about which of my friends went on to study in the arts. I could think of nobody. Our studies all followed the scientific, legal, medical, or business routes. I wondered from where this emphasis emerged. When I was in secondary school, I pursued subjects of a mostly technical kind, and by the time I was 21, I'd graduated as an engineer and had entered the construction industry. Then one day in mid-2007, I began drawing a ramshackle shed to the rear of my then rental bedsit. I added another large drawing of a building on Prussia Street, near to my place of work, a consulting engineering firm wherein, during the day, I designed large, complicated structures. Soon my portfolio, which I worked on in the evenings and nights, grew substantial enough to be submitted to art colleges. I was accepted to Dunleary in 2008, and from there began the demolition of my mind as I knew it. I began to look at the world anew. A few years later, I had my first solo exhibition here in the main gallery in the dock, an installation work curated by Alice Lyons called The Difference in How I Believe You. It was about new commercial structures then appearing on the edges of Irish country towns. As my research into the bungalows continued, I came across this interesting moment from the early 1960s, which seemed, the more I looked at it, like a sort of fork in the road for art and design education in Ireland. But it also showed me from where this attitude in rural Ireland towards an eminently practical education stemmed. One sunny spring day in 1961, five Scandinavian designers, Kaj Frank, Eric Herlow, Ake Holt, Gunnar Bielman Peterson, Eric Christian Sorensen, arrived in Ireland. This gathering of intellectuals and designers, the Scandinavian Design Group, were on a mission that, if it worked, could change the face of the Irish countryside forever. On advice from the export company, Ancoras Tráchtála Cho, the government commissioned a countrywide survey of Ireland's art and design industry and education. Irish designer and trade advisor Paul Hogan, infamous for his part in a daring heist on the Tate Gallery in 1956, where he reclaimed for Ireland Berthe Morisot's impressionist masterpiece Jour d'été, aided these five designers in this project that culminated in the publication of a rather dry-sounding document called Design in Ireland, report on the Scandinavian Design Group in Ireland. Where the surveyors were distinctly unimpressed with the art, architecture and industrial design education available, they were glowing in their praise of the traditional crafts. The report was finished 2 months later, and one of its recommendations was that Ireland's limited resources should be concentrated into one Irish design school. This school, they proposed, should be built outside of Dublin. The report went on to claim that creating interest was crucial in developing a self-sustaining domestic industry. They suggested this could be achieved by producing an informed and appreciative public that is so necessary as a background to the creative artist. By this time, Ireland's contribution to Western modernity in terms of the visual was, when compared to our literary achievements, considered small. The famous Irish architect Michael Scott, who designed Bosaurus and many other important modernist edifices, once went so far as to claim that the Irish were visually illiterate. If so, Scott forgets, I think, the ineffable images of mind brought forth by literature. In any case, the SDG observed that what they thought to be good design was not appreciated in Ireland. This suggested that the appropriate places to educate the public was not only in the university or college, but more public places, like the high street shop window, and they recommended that design competitions should be showcased in prominent displays in every town in Ireland, where the passing shoppers could view these goods. All of this, they reckoned, would fuel a strong domestic market, which would support the industry in its aim to increase export trade. The recommendations in their report, perhaps too long-term in their thinking, were however largely passed over by the Irish government. Fine art, design and architectural education stayed in the extant art and design college network. Most of these remained in the cities, except for Kilkenny's design school. The Kilkenny Design Shop carried on some of the more detailed recommendations of the SDG, but outside of this, what emerged later in the 60s with some force were the regional technical colleges, the RTCs. These offered a rich, if technical, kind of education to an emerging rural populace. Design here was not so much for the sake of good design as for its deployment in industry. Students were required to fill roles in the surrounding emerging industries, and their education at first was often tailored to this. It was a convincingly useful form of education, and its popularity had an effect, I think, on the sorts of choices being made in secondary schools for another generation or two hence. Thank you.
Motherland, cradle me, close my eyes, lullaby me to sleep. Keep me safe, lie with me, stay beside me, don't go. Don't you go.
Here's a poem that features a mother and a daughter walking the dunes in Strandhill, and they're reflecting on language, especially the first word that most of us say, mum, mom, ma'am, something like that. Marum, a word we love. Marum, silver point on dune. In midden-rich Shelley Valley, we yell, Marum, ampersand, gossamer. Words are jellies, our mouths warm. Words are ice flows, melting steadily. We go out on them anyhow. In high sun, Marum casts scythes, such cuts. You are falling in half moons, daughter. Fringe sickle snagging mascarad lashes, I adjust only mentally. Red dots droppered, black nail varnish. Wings of moths we minute trapped last May on Inishmurray. Marum, sea mirror. Mar halm, sea grass. Marum, early word, ever binding loose sands with tough rhizomes.
Cold Clyde at my head and feet. Cold Clyde's down at my feet. Were the tears my dear mother shed for me. Will wet my
Thanks. Kurdish blood, Irish heart. I love coming back to Leitrim from Tala. I love the crack, the ease with people, a few pints, and the latest news of the local GAA games. This is my second home and was my first home in Ireland when I was 11, and my family moved here from Iraq. That was in the summer of 2002. There's a photo of me at the top of a red and blue slide in a park here in Carrick. That July, I remember the red jumper I was wearing. The sky was blue and I was happy. We had made a long journey. We were safe and we had a chance for a new life. 21 years later, and I now have the keys of my own door. I have an old BMW. I have great friends and a life I love. I have played hurling in Croke Park. I coach youngsters who play for Thomas Davis GAA Club in Tala and might yet to play for Dublin. I'm Irish and I'm proud to be Irish, but I'm Kurdish too and I never forget it. Kurdish blood with an Irish heart. I went back to Iraq and Kurdistan this year to make a film documentary of my family's story and my own journey. People said, "Is it safe there? Will you be okay?" And I said, "Do you know how big Iraq is? How diverse and open? Do you know about Kurdistan, the Kurds and our history? This is my chance to show some of that history and our culture." The next time you go to one of your local Kurdish barbers, you might be able to chat about our music and our way of life. Our struggle for recognition as a sovereign people, what makes us unique as much as the same as every other people who share an identity, a language, a way of being. Making the film was quite a journey in every sense. The Eltash refugee camp where my family spent many years is long gone, like it never existed. But there's plenty of refugee camps still, far too many, and a deep sadness around all of them. There are millions of Kurdish refugees. That's a lot of displacement and a lot of suffering. We went to the site of the Halabja massacre, the Iraqi army chemical attack that killed up to 5,000 Kurdish civilians in March 1988 in the closing days of Iran-Iraq war. There's museums, but no museums, no film or replica plane or tanks can capture or convey the terror of what happened there. Mustard gas, birds falling from the trees, people dropping like leaves. Some of the original bomb casings have been turned to flower pots at a memorial for the dead of Halabja. You can't forget it. There was happiness too in my return. I got to visit some of my father's cousins. I walked on the family ground. There was a joy of seeing a Kurdish parliament and a proud, prosperous people speaking their own language. When I meet some of the other people who were in with us in the Eltash camp, quite a few found refuge in Ireland. We often say, "Don't you miss your friendships, the way we shared whatever we had, the way we all looked out for each other, the simplicity of things. We're all so busy now, we scarcely have time to see each other. My brother lives 10 minutes away from me and I might only see him 4 or 5 times a year. But that's life, and life is life wherever you are. It's up to all of us to make time and treasure that we have. Nobody chooses to be a refugee. It's forced on you. We're all human beings who want the simple enough things. Shelter, food, security, a home, a chance to make a future, enough love to keep us going. Life can turn in a flash. I was that child refugee, blessed to find a home here, the open door, the open heart, may they never close or falter. We often say in Kurdistan we have no friends but mountains, but I have a friend called Leitrim.
Here this is home, blue green mountain, ancestors' bones, here the heart can heal, the wounded mind restored and made whole again.
Here's a poem set in New England, in Vermont. It's called Happy Valley, and it has nothing to do with the television series. Happy Valley. The brook is this mix of roar and hiss, as if God had managed to scalpel a section of tempest and clothespin it in the woods, over there always, draped in the trees. While we eat white summer peaches from Celadon bowls, while the sun bleaches and blue jay squawks score the maple, oak, birch, and apple-treed sky with their oblique, scriabin musics. 15 years since I have seen a real fall, her deciduous burlesque, her glistering things sifting on the old cider mill, a holy show. I hold a wooden fragrance and a sodden mush of crushed, flowing apples in a cache and will never give it up. The cardinal is the best bird because it's a red mark on the blank snow amid the charcoal Twombly of maple, oak, birch, and apple branches. Pines are green and far away, don't figure. My sister in spring is even prettier, her smile, the genuine quality of it, undiminished in the many months since I have been in Happy Valley. It roars and is constantly in spate because it has its reasons, spring being spring, plus my visiting.
Now as you're going down Strawberry Lane, oh, every rose grows merry betide. Well, it's there you meet a pretty young man and tell him that he's a true lover of mine.
This poem is called Broken Wings and it's for Muhammad Saif Khan. We set to sea, the wind is strong, the safest port is always far away from home. Our children know the smoke of war, they know hunger, thirst, the rattle at the door. I kiss your hand, we say goodbye, no time to waste, no time to cry. Our names are washed up on the shore, remember Mary Ellen Joyce, remember Noor. On broken wings we rise and fall, and some of us will not see land at all. We rise and fall on broken wings, we hope for light to guide us in. Will there be refuge for our boat, an open door, an open heart, or will we meet the walls of hate with dogs to drive us wounded from your gate? We bless the good, we leave the rest, we nail our hope upon the mast. Look in our eyes, what do you see? The burning light of your own history. The wind is strong, we set to sea, the safest port is far away. I kiss your hand, we say goodbye, no time to waste, no time to cry. Our names are written on the shore, Ilan, Mary, Jesus, and Noor. On broken wings we'll rise again and soar up high above the walls of pain. We'll rise again on broken wing and scatter seeds to plant the spring. Totally different tone, but from this same place. I'm sure many of you know the wonder of Crianan's just down the street, and how great a night there can be with music and song and dancing and chat and all the rest. And Liam is such a great host and talker, and I've had many great nights there. And he told me this story one night, and I just had to turn it into a poem. How could one not? But it's, you know, it's Liam Crianan really that I credit for this, but I gave it a title. Beckett on a Boreen. Two men going home this night. One points to the sky. The sun, he says. The moon, says the other. No, the sun. The moon. The sun. The moon. The effin' sun. No, the feckin' moon. Moon, sun, sun, moon. And they lay into each other and tumble into the ditch, fighting and flailing. Another man comes by in his bike, stops, looks down at them, and they see him and pounce and pull him in. Point up. Sun or moon? And it's more like a threat than a question. Oh, Jesus, lads, he says, I wouldn't know. Sure, I'm not from around here.
You've been listening to Sunday Miscellany Live at Iron Mountain Festival, recorded last year at the Dock Carrick on Shannon in County Leitrim. The scripts were Looking for Gulls in Gallia Narbonensis by Mary Byrne, The Scandinavian Design Group by Adrian Duncan, Marum, a poem by Alice Lyons, Kurdish Blood, Irish Heart by Zach Muradi, Happy Valley, another poem by Alice Lyons, and two poems by Vincent Woods, Broken Wings and Beckett on a Boreen. The music was Aval de la Rabiera, an Occitan traditional song sung by Zoe Basha with Alton O'Brien. Motherland, sung by Eleanor Shanley with Garadice. That's Dave Sheridan, John McCartan and Porrig McGovern, with special guest Tom Morrow on fiddle. Three Little Babes, an Appalachian traditional song performed by Zoe Basha and Alton O'Brien. Sanctuary, performed by Eleanor Shanley and Garadice with Tom Morrow. Strawberry Hill, also by Zoe Basha and Alton O'Brien. And finally, a set of reels from Garadice and Tom Morrow. Sound supervision on this morning's programme was by Ciarán Dunn and Liam Mullen. Sunday Miscellany's broadcast coordinators are Elaine Conlon and Amandine Passo. The producer is Sarah Binchy. And you can find more from Sunday Miscellany and other RTE arts and culture programmes at rte.ie/culture. And to listen back to this morning's programme, you can go to the RTE radio player or the programme website, rte.ie/radio1/Sunday Miscellany.
You've been listening to the Sunday Miscellany podcast. For more from us, you can follow the programme on Facebook, Twitter, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Just search for RTE Sunday Miscellany.